Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is Thursday. What a day. It is great to have you in live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. I had a tremendous night of sleep, hydrated, watched the NBA draft, hugely excited for the Seahawks Arizona tonight, the Pacific Northwest. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm great. It's funny, like, getting a good night's sleep at one point in your life becomes a very exciting thing.
Yeah.
One point in your life, going out to the bar is very exciting.
Yeah.
And then getting a good night's sleep is just exciting. And I had a big realization last night.
That you like the NBA draft as much as I like high school football recruiting.
Yeah, like I'm how you are such a nerd about recruiting for the NFL. That's how I am for the NBA.
Yeah, well, like we're one percenters. But
yes.
Everybody's got something they're into that nobody else is. My wife can play jigsaw puzzles all week, and I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah, like I love the Heat's pick. I love Nico Mannion to the Warriors. Point guard at 48. It's a steal. RJ Hampton's going to the Bucks. I love all of it.
Well, let's start with this. So the NBA draft, it didn't used to be this way, but, you know, life changes. This year, 2020, is the year of change. The NBA draft now, all of it is now a developmental draft. The NBA draft now is a developmental draft. These are all startups. A lot of potential for some of these startups, but they'll probably only be one or two Ubers. You know what happens to angel investors and startups? Most disappear into the ether or fail quickly. That is what the draft is. Ask yourself this. What sport do we bet the most? NFL. What sport do we play more fantasy with? Football, NFL. What sport has the fewest games and creates the most urgency? The games matter more. NFL. Fact, fact, fact. All three of those are what? They create emotion. And emotion is what drives us to a television set. The NBA ratings have been on a 10-year slide. It's politics. Oh, come on. Can you stop your agenda? Hockey ratings got hit the worst this year. They didn't do politics. Baseball playoffs took it in the chin. They didn't do much politics. The Masters golf rating was the lowest since 1957. They didn't do politics. Maybe the politics didn't help the NBA. The NBA's got a bigger problem. Who are these guys? Joy loves them. 1% of people do. And I think it's great. I like high school football recruiting. Who are they? Last night, I'm watching the NBA draft. I'm a sportscaster. It's become the baseball draft. You ever watch a baseball draft? You're like, oh, I remember that guy at the College World Series, the Vanderbilt pitcher. There'll be like three guys a year in the baseball draft. I'm like, oh, he played at Vanderbilt. It's always like Southern baseball. Oh, he was LSU third baseman. Last night, not a lot of Duke guys or Gonzaga guys or UCLA guys. I'm rooting for the kid from Tel Aviv. I think it's amazing the story of these Nigerian families and the players. I think it's amazing, but I don't know them. And then they disappear to bad. The stars in this draft go in the top eight picks. They go to bad teams. Bad teams don't make the playoffs. And those kids disappear into the NBA ether. By the way, the good teams don't want the players. Golden State Warriors, reportedly. My favorite player was James Wiseman. They're going to look to move him. They want to win now. LeBron James a few years ago could have had Andrew Wiggins. He's like, nah, give me Kevin Love. I want to win playoff games now. So the good teams and the good players, I've been saying this for years. The NFL understands the value of college football. The NBA rolls its eyes at college basketball. The only reason I knew Zion outside of some internet photos and videos, because of Duke. I learned his personality and I loved him. I saw his smile. I saw him break through shoes. I loved Zion. I mean, we talked about him. I was talking about him when he's 19. If not for Duke, he's just an internet sensation. There's like 8,000 of those created every day on Instagram and YouTube. But then I met him and I saw him smile and I heard him talk and how much he loved Duke and he broke through the shoes and he refused I'm going to play again. I love this sport. Well, I love you. And now that's why I watch you. And Zion's first NBA game was a summer league game. And he broke a television rating. And he played in the NBA and they put him on Christmas. And he got a rating. The more you bet, the more you know, the more you care, the more you watch. The NFL has never rolled its eyes at college football. They understand. It's a free marketing platform. Anybody listening or watching this show, if you were starting a business today, and you know you don't have a ton of money, but you start a small business. Joey and I, we're going to start businesses. If I said to you, hey, I'm going to give you 2 free years of marketing, you'd be like, okay, I'll take it. Every company in the world is looking for free marketing. That's what college basketball is. You don't even pay for it. That's what college football is. We have demonized college basketball. It's the only reason I know who Zion is. I'm not asking the kids to stay there for 4 years, three, two. But one isn't the end of the world. By the way, the top of the NFL draft last year, here's where the players came from. LSU, Ohio State, Georgia, Bama, Oregon, Auburn, Clemson, Florida, and Alabama. I watched them all for 3 years. I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting against them. I've got an emotional connection. You're all, everybody's got their agenda with politics. And nobody's watching the NBA because of politics. The NBA's been on a 9 to 10 year slide. There was no Black Lives Matter 10 years ago, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And the ratings were going down. I'm not blaming the kids. Stop demonizing college basketball. It's a free platform. Go for a year. Meet kids you'd never meet otherwise. Or go to the G League. Yuck. Nothing against it, but if LeBron James would have gone to Carolina for 1 year, I bet you today, and he's been the player empowerment player in our league, I bet you today, he would have the coolest memories of North Carolina. Zion will never be able to duplicate Duke. He may bounce around the NBA. LeBron's been on a bunch of teams. But you go back and ask Michael Jordan about Carolina. He goes there constantly. He gives money to the program. He was connected to Dean Smith to the end. He's connected to Roy Williams. I'm not saying you have to stay there forever. But this idea that college basketball is just bad for the NBA is nonsense. Last night, it's just a developmental draft. Maybe one of those kids will be Uber. But most will disappear into the fabric. 2 years from now, we'll be talking about other guys we didn't watch and don't know who they are. Good luck to all of them. I am rooting for them. Okay, so it is, I'll just tell you right now, I probably shouldn't say this. It's bad for my ratings. It's a really bad week to bet football. It's a lousy NFL number week. I've already made my 3 biggest NFL bets. I did it on Monday, and the lines have all gotten worse. The best bet of the week remaining may be tonight, and it's Seattle. Seattle over Arizona. And I know what you're saying. Oh, Colin, you're crazy. You're a crazy old man. Kyler Murray's amazing. But everything changes for Kyler Murray tonight. That win over Buffalo and Miami, come on, man. You didn't watch those games. 75% of the country did not get those games beamed into their local network affiliate. You watched them on highlights. Tonight's national TV. Kyler Murray this week is getting MVP talk. We didn't get that before this week. Oh, by the way, he's now division lead against the rival Hawks, can pull away. Tonight is a microscope. Tonight is pressure. Tonight is expectations. Look at the people he's up with in the MVP odds. Mahomes, Super Bowl and an MVP. Russell Wilson, Rodgers, Brady, Super Bowls, MVPs. Kyler Murray, career record, 11-13-1, and I like him a lot. Tonight is his first moment. I mean, real moment, not regional TV. And this is what Hail Marys do. I mean, this is what they do. They take spectacular talent to MVP of the league, he and Mahomes and Russell Wilson. And I'm not saying he's not gifted. But if you don't think pressure matter, if you don't think expectations change the game, you're crazy. You know how many guys I've seen fold on golf courses? How many quarterbacks I've seen fold in fourth quarters? The NFL is about steps. Now, the good news for Kyler is to go from 5-11 to the MVP, We saw it with Mahomes and we saw it with Lamar. And if not for an injury, we would have seen it with Carson Wentz. You can go from young guy, rookie year, chop it up a little, and then you're the MVP. And I will say this for Kyler, whereas the NBA draft was 30 prospects, the NFL draft now is no prospects. When Joe and I were growing up, the NFL first round was starters, but the quarterbacks were always, they'll sit for a while. Yeah, that's over. Like, that's over. And they're all good early. So I think Kyler will be good tonight. But Arizona's been outplayed for 3 weeks in a row at home. And they've won two of them. Now they go to Seattle. Kyler's being talked about as an MVP. Seattle's lost three of four. It's the biggest game in 2 years for the Seahawks. Pete Carroll's going to the Hall of Fame. Russell Wilson's going to the Hall of Fame. And here comes the young kid up to the cold, frigid, wet weather of the Northwest. Really like Seattle tonight a lot.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
If you've never gone to an NBA game, it's sometimes surprising how physical the league is. I've always said I love Chris Paul. Chris Paul was physical. Michael Jordan was physical. Michael got tackled for 7 years. You just don't understand. When you watch the Lakers and the Miami Heat in the finals, as Joy and I discussed, the Lakers' older players, Rondo and LeBron and AD, they intimidated Miami. They just leaned on them and pushed them. That wasn't about who has the better passers and shooters. That was just men pushing around kids. That's why young teams almost, I can't remember the last young team that won an NBA championship. I mean, seriously, it's you're talking about men versus boys. And so LaMelo Ball gets drafted by Michael Jordan in Charlotte, and he's going to be wildly entertaining. I mean, Lonzo hasn't become what we thought. But LaMelo, I think, is a little bit better shooter, but not a very good shooter. Lonzo's a terrible shooter. So I was shocked last night going on Twitter, which isn't real life, but sometimes does offer some context, and how many people were like, oh, you got to be a star. Well, no, he has no chance to be a fundamental game changer in the NBA. And it's nothing against the Ball family. I've brought the dad on many times. I think he's wildly entertaining, goofy. And I like Lonzo, and I think LaMelo's going to be fun and entertaining. But go look at the most important winningest players in the NBA last 30 years. And I wrote them down. Magic, Bird, Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, Steph, Duncan, and that's eight. Magic, Shaq, Bird, Duncan, MJ, Kobe, Steph, LeBron. All of them are either great scorers or they have a physical presence. Magic Johnson was a 6'9 point guard. The average point guard was 6'2. He had a physical presence. Then go after the next eight that maybe don't have the titles but are winning players and are not maybe fundamentally changing the league but are great players. D-Wade, Kevin Garnett, KD, Kawhi, Dirk, Akeem, Karl Malone, Barkley. All are great scorers, or they have a physical presence. And in many instances, Karl Malone or Akeem or Shaq, they're both. LaMelo can't shoot. He will never be a great scorer in this league, and he does not like contact. He plays defense like kids in the burbs play defense. He doesn't like contact. He doesn't like attacking the rim. He doesn't like getting hit. He doesn't want to hit the deck. I remember when D-Wade came into this league and Michael Jordan came into the league. I watched them as rookies. They attacked the rim, and that's when you could tackle guys. D-Wade didn't care. By the way, his last year in the league, he still didn't care. They attacked bigger players. D-Wade, 6'4 and a half, would go right at Shaq, go right to the rim. Michael Jordan, people were worried when Michael Jordan came into this league that he played too hard. People were like, dude, shoot jumpers. Not his style. The great fundamental game changers in this league are one of two things or both. They are either elite scorers, you can't stop them, or they've got this physical component. Now, LaMelo, those are two things he'll never have. There's never been a guy that came into the NBA, and I've said this about UFC. By 9 years old, it will be established. At 9 years old, whether you're the kind of guy that will go into an octagon and get hit in the face or not. If you grow up with aggressive brothers, your brothers, you're playing football in the yard, they're knocking you around there, maybe you'll fight in the UFC. You're not taking kids with the crown molding, granite countertops in the burbs to be UFC guys generally. Like, it gets established very early. Are you going to be a fighter or a lover? Are you going to be finesse or are you going to be physical? And a lot of it has to do with your family and your brothers and whatever it is. Your life, right? Like, LaMelo's going to be fun and exciting. And I think he'll be much more riveting to watch than Lonzo. I think his game is much more TV-centric and TV-equipped. He's a very clever passer. Although Lonzo's a very clever passer, and he's a big guard, so he'll rebound well. But this league has been changed. I'm not talking about guys that are fun to watch. Trae Young's fun to watch. Who changes the league? Who's a great player? Great scorer, physical component. LaMelo doesn't have either. He never going to be a physical player. That's okay. By the way, a lot of guys made the Hall of Fame, not all physical players. George Gervin's going to make the Hall of Fame. He was the Iceman, 6'7", weighed about 112 pounds, and finger rolled from 8 feet. You can be, but not today. Not the way the world works. And so, fun, exciting, yes. Game changer. No, won't happen. It's okay. Congrats to the family. It's a great story. It's a great American story. The draft last night was developmental and great stories. Not a lot of great players, but great stories.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Warriors guard Klay Thompson, one of the really good kids in the league. I know Michael Thompson's his dad. I've known for years. He's just a wonderful guy. Great family. Klay Thompson got hurt last night at a workout. A lot of concerns that it's pretty serious. Could be ACL, calf popped. Don't know. Not guessing, not predicting. Fingers crossed for Klay Thompson. But if he does have a torn ACL, I do believe the Warriors dynasty and the Warriors run is officially over. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are called the Splash Brothers. They're not winning titles with one splash. And this goes to something I've always believed and I've never been very good at, but enjoy the great moments. They're fleeting. They don't last. If you look at the history of dynasties in this country with Tim Duncan and Tom Brady and LeBron, and almost all of our great dynasties, they have only one thing in common. The stars in their prime were overwhelmingly healthy. And if you really look at what the Warriors are today, Steph is now 33 and pretty darn brittle. Klay can't stay healthy if this is an ACL. Draymond's past his prime. Andrew Wiggins is talented but largely a trade piece. And James Wiseman, who I thought was the best player in the draft, is fun, but he's a kid, and that's not going to win you a playoff series. So LeBron, for the 12th, 13th year in a row, will again be the lead dog in the NBA, and so will the Lakers. And it's because, overwhelmingly, LeBron's never hurt. He's just always ready to go. And by the way, the key to the success this year for the Lakers wasn't just LeBron. He was there the year before. It was AD, who had been hurt, and finally this year was not. That's why the Lakers won the title. What I think is fascinating about the Warriors is that what created the dynasty was health. And what ended it is probably going to be health. The reason the Warriors were able to go get Kevin Durant is because Steph Curry got hurt very early in his career, and they didn't have to pay him big money. They didn't have to pay him huge money. Therefore, they could afford Kevin Durant. And now, Steph's injury, Klay's potential ACL injury, kind of what ends it. There's just too many good, young teams in the West. And, when I look at all dynasties have kind of a different sensibility or feel to them. But it's really funny about the Warriors dynasty. I always felt it was kind of fragile and it was a little physically fragile. Kevin Durant got hurt. Steph's always had, injury issues. But it was always kind of also, not a knock on it, but it was emotionally fragile. Draymond and Steve Kerr had their issues. Draymond had his issues with Kevin Durant. By the way, the Kobe Shaq thing was a little emotionally fragile, but they had been together. Remember, before the three titles, they'd been together several years. So it lasted a while and was very formidable for years and years. Even with Del Harris, they weren't winning titles. It was a very formidable team. But I always felt Golden State was a little fragile. Some of the guys, KD and Steph, struggled with health. Now Klay Thompson, who was an Iron Man early in his career, now he's going through it. And I always thought it was a little fragile emotionally. Mark Jackson did not see eye to eye with the general manager and the ownership. That was always a little off-putting to the ownership and Mark. And then Kerr comes in and kind of changes thing, and he wants to give Mark Jackson credit, but it's his team and he changed the offense. And you cross your fingers on this, but the West is getting better. The Lakers are absolutely better. The Clippers should be better. I don't want to play Denver next year. Chris Paul to the Suns, they're better. Dallas is young and getting better. You cross your fingers. If Clay's out for another year, there's some stuff to reboot here.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Philadelphia is just imploding. The Philadelphia Eagles, a team I have defended many times, and Carson Wentz had to answer media questions yesterday because apparently the practices, according to multiple reports in Philadelphia, are lousy. People are screwing off, and it manifests itself on bad Sunday games. And Carson Wentz addressed the stories that the Eagles' practices are just a clown show.
Are my practices perfect? No. I mean, that's why it's practice. But as far as sloppy practice habits and those things, for one, I mean, you guys are out there every day, and then you guys are asked to leave. So the media is not even out there. So I don't know where that's coming from. But it is what it is. You know, I know I'm not perfect. I know that's why it's practice and I got to be better all the time.
Let me ask you, do quarterbacks run practices? Not really. Head coaches do. The assistants that would allow bad practices, who hired them? It wasn't Carson Wentz. This is a coach issue. And I like Doug Peterson, but can I just throw this at you? Philadelphia won a Super Bowl. And I made fun of them at the time. They partied for a year. The head coach got a book deal. Nick Foles got a statue. So did Doug Peterson. Everybody got a local car endorsement deal. Colin, the Philly special was all time. It made the score 22-12. You won 41-33. Even that was overrated. Wasn't that even that a little overrated? Folks, this franchise, since the Super Bowl, is a 500 franchise. 21-19-1. They're not buttoned up. You know, it's why lottery winners, 50% go broke. They don't know how to act. They buy 9 jet skis, 6 cars, 3 homes. They don't know how to act. If you give a millionaire just $1 million, he turns it into 2. He's been there before. New England's been to 9 Super Bowls. They've won 6. Find me the statues outside their stadium. Philadelphia wins 1. They got statues to a backup quarterback. This franchise needs to get its act together. I mean, that's what it is. They can't get their act together. This has been like a 2.5-year story. Infighting, coaching, practices bad, players ripping other. Button it up. Tear the statue down for a couple weeks. How about we go to the stadium and not glamorize ourselves and romanticize the past? I don't see a lot of statues in Foxborough. Yeah, you know, it's like the difference between the Yankees and the Mets. The Yankees put Babe Ruth in the outfield and World Series rings. The Mets, it's pennants. Oh, we won. 1 year we won the division. What are the standards? Like, let's get over the Super Bowl. You're a 500 franchise since. That's all, in a bad division, not even a good division, in a lousy division. So there you go. Greg Cosell, if you play fantasy football, if you bet football, if you love football, if you really care about football, Greg Cosell's 10 minutes of NFL Meat Sandwich, and he is now joining us live, as he does every Thursday at this time. So it's interesting, when you think of Gruden, you think of big opinions,
yeah,
big personality. I mean, that John Gruden is, you know, people do impressions John Gruden, but it's funny, Trent Dilfer said this week, he goes, they actually win really boring football. And I'm like, well, when you watch them, I said, they remind me a little of Minnesota. They run it. Their quarterback is low risk. Their defense is susceptible with maybe one pass rusher. We love the Raiders. We're not sure if we like the Vikings. They feel like the same team to me a little bit. Your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting you say that because the Raiders, in many ways, like the Vikings, play a lot out of base personnel. They're a team in the league, and there are not many teams like this. They play with 3 wide receivers on less than 50% of their offensive snaps.
Wow.
This is a team, Colin, that lines up with a fullback, with 2 tight ends, with 3 tight ends. Now, and the thing about Gruden is he's very multiple with his formations out of those tight end packages, but they line up and they run the ball.
Yeah.
And Josh Jacobs he's a very, very good back. He can work really well and can find space. He has natural power. He can re-accelerate, and he can also bounce outside. So they're really a team that's built, when you get right down to it, on running the football and then trying to create explosive plays off of that.
I'm actually fascinated. So I have this theory, and I don't know if it bears itself out, that Jameis Winston tends to be a little loose. When you combine him, when you combine him with Bruce Arians, who can coach loose, it is a lot of turnovers. But if Jameis, who's a little loose, had a coach like John Payton, and you could just get some of the productivity, but eliminate 30-35% of the mistakes, that Jameis has a chance to be a very effective player for the Saints. I cannot wait to watch this transpire. Is Jameis and Sean Payton, what do you expect to see?
Yeah, that's a fascinating mix, because Jameis is certainly not rhythmic in the way Drew Brees is. Drew Brees is as rhythmic as any quarterback that's played. And certainly Jameis has a stronger arm, so he can make different kinds of throws than Drew. So it's going to be a really interesting balance for Sean Payton as to how he puts together a game plan and calls a game. Because you do look at Jameis and you say, hey, I think we can design some things where we can push it down the field a little bit more than we can do with Drew Brees. But on the other hand, we don't want to get into a situation where we're asking Winston to push it down the field too much,
right?
Because that's where we can get a little reckless. So it'll be a very interesting balance between staying kind of rhythmic, which is not, Winston can do it, but that's not his strength, versus saying, hey, maybe we can throw some more of those seam balls to Jared Cook, which we really quite haven't been able to throw very much with Drew.
Yeah. So here's a game that is on paper. Green Bay should be in trouble. So the Colts, the Colts run the football, and the Packers are, you know, they love the warm weather. They have a lead, but you get into a fist fight, you get into the octagon, they're not nearly as comfortable. And I look at this game and I think, oh, this is going to be a nightmare for the Packers. And then I dig a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper, and I think, I don't know if the Colts can stay with them offensively. Will the Packers be able to negate or slow the Colts run game this weekend, in your opinion?
Well, I think the run game for the Colts has been a little up and down. I mean, I loved Jonathan Taylor coming out of Wisconsin. I think he's still struggling to figure out the NFL game, because he runs with a little hesitancy and uncertainty, which you never saw at Wisconsin. Last week when they beat Tennessee, Nyheim Hines was their feature back. He played far and away more snaps than Wilkins or Taylor. So while their run game might have some numbers, Colin, I don't think it has the consistency where you say, hey, they're just going to line up and run it, and they'll run it down the throats of the Packers. Maybe they'll take that approach. Maybe this will be the week that Jonathan Taylor really shows up. But the other thing about Green Bay, even though I think they're better against the pass, is they're pretty well defined in their coverage concepts. And I think you'll see Rivers and company take some shots down the field against coverage that they'll anticipate, and they'll need to hit some big plays in this game.
So Joy and I noticed it about halfway to three quarters through last year that Miami looked really well coached, very smart, certain limitations extending the field or stretching it, but they had talent. And right now you're seeing all that hard work and coaching, special teams buttoned up, good defense, it's winning games. But we also know that the NFL usually is, you know, you take some steps in this. Do you buy Miami? Are you surprised by Tua? What does the film say about this team overall?
Well, obviously everybody focuses on Tua, and he's played well the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's essentially played well since he's been in there. He's doing an excellent job. He's a ball distributor. They're really setting him up well with defined reads and throws. To me, the story of Miami over the last month is their defense. When you watch their defense, they have become very aggressive. They put six people on the line of scrimmage. They make it difficult to sort out who's coming and who's not coming. They have these zero coverage looks. Sometimes it's pure man and it's true zero coverage. Sometimes it's kind of a zone match behind what looks like a six-man rush. They're very difficult to kind of figure out right now. And I think Brian Flores is doing an unbelievable job with how he's putting together this defense. He has taken the approach that we are going to be proactive defensively, and offenses are going to have to figure us out. They had four or five snaps last week, Colin, against the Chargers. They had eight defensive backs on the field.
Feels a little New England, by the way.
Well, that's where Brian Flores came from.
Yep. So a lot of people are selling their Ravens stock. And I said, listen, I'm not going to sell Lamar Jackson because he struggled in Foxborough against Belichick in a monsoon. Give me a few weeks on this. Now they face Derrick Henry. What are you concerned about with Baltimore? And what are you not concerned about with the Ravens?
Well, here's what the Titans are going to see on film. They're going to look at the game last week against New England, and they're going to see that Damian Harris had 22 carries, Colin. All 22 carries had a fullback on the field, what we call 21 personnel. All 22. And on those 22 carries, because there was a fullback on the field, the Ravens were in their base defense, okay? What they really want to be in is their sub-nickel with five defensive backs, their sub-dime with six defensive backs. That's where all their pressure schemes come from. So if I'm Tennessee, and again, every week is different. It doesn't mean Tennessee is going to rush for 200 yards. But if I'm Tennessee, I take note of that, and I say, you know what? We've got Derrick Henry. And we're going to line up. We like to play with a fullback, too. We like to play with two tight ends, sometimes three tight ends. We're going to make them stay in their base defense, line up, and have to play the run. And remember, Calais Campbell is out.
Yeah. So, listen, Jamal Adams, it can be a dynamic force defensively. You move him up near the line of scrimmage. He sometimes takes a lot of snaps at linebacker. Carlos Dunlap still has something. He's long and athletic. We assume they join Seattle's defense, and suddenly Seattle's defense is at least stomachable. It's not. It's not. They haven't done anything. Is it a scheme thing? Or what's going on?
Well, it's funny about Jamal Adams. And again, I'm just responding to the film. And, you know, that's all I do. I think Jamal Adams is a linebacker. And I think at the end of the day, that in some ways, and maybe Seattle would tell me I'm crazy, but I think in some ways, Colin, that limits some of the things you can do with him because he is really a linebacker, not a safety. He'd almost fit perfectly to me in Bill Belichick's defense with the way they use number 21, Adrian Phillips, who's really a linebacker for them. So to me, that's what Jamal Adams is. But when you use him as a safety, I think it presents some limitations in coverage.
Well, they've struggled in coverage. That's interesting. By the way, that's how the Jets used him. It should be noted. That's how Greg Williams used him in New York. He put him in the box a lot. So
he's a linebacker. He's a glorified linebacker.
Yeah. So Kyler Murray has gone from interesting in 5-11 last year to MVP talk around the league. He's made a big leap. I also know that's your play of the week. Thoughts on him?
Yeah. You know, the thing about Murray is they've really started to use the design run game as a major foundation of what they do. And again, when I say major foundation, it doesn't mean you run it 20 times, but it's a significant part of what they do. And so Murray's had a couple of games this year, including last week, where he's not throwing the ball particularly well, but they still score points. His ability to run both by design, Colin, and improvisationally is really a factor in their offense. And boy, does it change the way you have to defend this team. That's what makes it so impressive. And I wanted to show a play where he scores a touchdown on a design run from the red zone, what we call the high red zone between the 10 and the 20, because that's where he's been such a factor with these design runs. So, you know, what we can do here is we can start to take a look at that play, which was a touchdown last week. And you can see it against Buffalo. It's basically a zone read, and it's a touchdown. But they did some interesting things here. First, you're going to see that they're in the pistol formation. So you've got Murray and you've got Kenyon Drake. But they've got two tight ends as well, Max Williams on the line of scrimmage and Dan Arnold in a wing alignment. So this is two tight end personnel, not a spread formation. It's a zone read concept. So the defensive end to that side will be unblocked. And you can see that he will be unblocked. Your basic zone read. We know that teams with mobile quarterbacks run this all the time. So you can see Mario Addison. He steps inside. He thinks Drake might get the ball, but he's an unblocked player. But he's not going to stop Murray anyway, even if he did the right thing. So now let's go to the two tight ends. The reason this is interesting is they are now lead blockers, and they're going to block the slot corner there and the safety. So basically, you're dealing with a zone read with two lead blockers. So it's really nice design. And when you get Murray in space like that, when he can get to the second and third level, Colin, without anybody touching him, then he's really, really difficult. So this will be an intriguing matchup tonight. there were times in that first game when these two teams played, Seattle and Arizona, where Seattle used a spy, obviously not on a play like that, but in a passing situation. But Murray has been so dynamic with his legs. He's so much fun to watch.
Good stuff, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, 41 years. Good talking to you. Always appreciate it, Greg. Thank you.
All right, Colin, thanks much.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, Russell Wilson continues to get criticized and take all the heat for this, but the untold story, and I've been on this for the last couple of months, the untold story of Seattle's problems is the front office and Pete Carroll. They have not done a very good job in the last 3 years with their first and their second round picks. In the last 3 years, Seattle in the first round has drafted running backs, defensive ends, and a linebacker. None of them apparently are very good, or none of them have hit big. They also drafted in the second round a defensive end and a safety who didn't hit. So of their six first and second round picks in the last few years, one, DK Metcalf, tied to Russell Wilson. Everybody else was passing. They took him. He's hit. So you're telling me Russell will look at these guys. None of them, I mean, some of them are, Rashad Penny's a bust. LJ Collier not doing much. Many think he's a bust. Now, if you say, well, Colin, that doesn't matter. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. It doesn't matter. Let's go look at the New Orleans Saints. They're a number one seed. Oh, wait. They have not missed on one pick in the first or second round in 5 years. Not one. Many are Pro Bowlers. They're a number one seed. Who's the best team in the league? Kansas City. Their last five first-round picks. All Pro Bowlers. Oh, by the way, they got Chris Jones and Nicole Hardman, second round. Yeah, second round. The Steelers have only had four first- or second-round picks in the last couple years. Three of the four are stars. Isn't that ironic? Kansas City and the Saints and the Steelers nail the first and second round picks. Here's how the draft works. That's why Bill Polian's a Hall of Famer. You can't miss on first and second rounders. Third rounders should also be starters. Fourth round on, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, you go to the fourth and fifth round. It's a lot of guys you didn't watch play in college. But you got to get Pro Bowlers in the first and second round. The Saints have, the Chiefs have, the Steelers have. Three best teams in the league. By the way, I would say the fourth best team in the league today is Tampa Bay. Go look at their last three drafts. That's a lot of hits in the first and second round. So you can keep blaming Russell Wilson in their last. And I've said this for you. I've been saying this over and over again. The media will not ask the question. They're afraid to confront Belichick, and they're afraid to confront Pete Carroll in Seattle. They're intimidated by him. He's not. I have had multiple general managers say, what the hell is Seattle doing? I've had him say that for 2-3 years in the first, second round. By the way, what did Seattle, Joy, go and trade for so far this year? A defensive end and a safety. Why? Because they've drafted two defensive ends and neither panned out, and they draft a safety and he's not a star. So they're going overcompensating for what they missed on in the draft and giving up other draft picks. And Greg Cosell said, actually, Jamal Adams isn't even a safety. He's a linebacker, of which they've already got two great ones, and they just wasted a first-round pick on another one. Where can he play? Russell Wilson is the life preserver. And I got nothing against Pete Carroll and John Schneider, but I'm tired of hearing it's Russell Wilson. You can't whiff on first- and second-round picks. The Saints don't, the Chiefs don't, and the Steelers don't, and Tampa Bay doesn't. And those are the four best teams in the league right now.